welcome to More Than a Whelan. You are listening to episode 36. That is Reese Matheson for Brisbane Lions, in case you're wondering. My name is Sean Whelan, your host, and I'm thrilled to be joined by
Paul Mitchell.
Hi there, everybody. Welcome to More Than a Whelan, a podcast about creative writing written by me, but most importantly, inspired by you. Hi there. Welcome to More Than a Wheel, and we are coming at you from sunny downtown Collingwood, Castaway Studios, in the greatest suburb in the world. My name is Sean M. Whelan. I'm your host. You know that. I'm going to read you a poem to begin with. This is called Coughing Up Ink. David's life, a possible event. The blood-soaked toilet paper. And when that ran out, the sheets from the bed. I looked through David's drawer today. The syringe was no surprise, nor the pornography, but the loaded gun and chewing gum too. I'd never seen him use chewing gum before. They'll ban these one day. David picks up the pen from the coffee table, holds it up to the light. The pale blue vein is almost dry. Why? I ask while stirring his coffee. Thick and black. I think of using a tiny funnel to pour into the plastic tube, filling a page and holding it up to my face to inhale whenever the fatigue set in. Or if I was really buggered, like pushing a deadline, just stick it into my mouth and suck. Making coffee has always been a major source of procrastination. Did you hear me, Susan? I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. I said they'll ban these one day. Yes, yes, I caught that. But why? It's a dangerous source of unregulated information. We'll run out of paper first, David. Susan, what are you doing? David, staring at my hands. I look down to find the pen stirring the cream through the thick black coffee. But this isn't procrastination. It's called social intercourse. They tell me it's important. And if he turns his head in a certain way and the sun hits his face as it did the same time last week, another kind of intercourse could take place. Except there's a gun in his drawer, not to mention chewing gum. David's finished his coffee and I've thrown the pen into the bin. It was out of ink anyway. He gets up from his chair. This means he's ready, so I have to know. David, why do you keep those things in your drawer? He lets out a deep sigh, moves towards the window, blocking the afternoon sun. It forms a protective halo around his silhouette. I like this word, silhouette. I guess I should have told you sooner, Susan. I'm a cop. He turns towards me and the sun bursts over his left shoulder. In the orange blaze, I see him at the bungled undercover job, doubled over on a hotel bed, trying to stem the flow of blood while the drug dealers and armed traders flee down a fire escape. A removal truck pulls up in the street. The light goes out. It's his shadow I address now. So why the gun then? Right, so that was this has got special significance. This was the first poem I ever had published, Paul, in Veranda issue, volume 10, 1995. Whew. And that was the first time I've read it. Like, that was a cold reading. I don't even really know what it's about, to be honest. Do you ever, have old works that you, can't even remember the intention behind them? Or, I don't know, confuse yourself? No, it's just me. Okay.
Definitely can't remember writing them. That's one thing. And can't remember that they actually got published is another thing.
Yeah.
And there it is. Turns up, someone says, oh, I read that back in that. I'm like, I can't remember it.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a terrible memory for my work. And I'm not very good at documenting. So there are works out there that I have no knowledge of them existing anymore. which is weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the one of the things, I guess, with the spoken word as well, where it just, back in the old pre-digital days, stuff just got made and disappeared, and now we scramble around going, remember that great thing?
That's right.
Can't find it.
Nah.
It's just buried in the
sun. I had a moment of that this morning. So in Facebook memories, because you and I, we go a way back. actually, I should tell my listeners who you are, really. You are Paul Mitchell. You do many things. Well, I first encountered you through poetry and spoken word, I guess, but you've also written a novel or two.
Novel, short story collection.
Yeah.
Bunch of essays.
Yeah. We've been in quite a few shows together.
We've fought some battles out there.
We have, yes.
I tell you.
Back in the day. And today a show came up, Liner Notes Nirvana.
Yep. Remember being part of that.
Yeah. Do you remember what you read?
Don't remember what I did.
And neither do I. And I tried to find my poem. So to explain, Liner Notes is a show that I'm a co-producer of, and I've spoken about this on the show before, but each performer is allocated a track from the album. In this case, it was Nirvana's Nevermind, and you're just asked to respond to that track any way you want. I remember my track was Something in the Way, and I was trying to find it in my email, because I often email pieces to me just so I can find them. Was in there. Then I remembered, no, back then I was on Yahoo, not Gmail. So I opened up my Yahoo account for the first time in some time. Still couldn't find it. So it's a mystery for now.
No, I want to say I had In Bloom, but I'm not sure I did. Because I just love the drums. Maybe I just got up there and did something drummy. Not sure.
I think you did do something drummy, as weird as that sounds. Now it's starting to ring a bell. You doing a little air drum solo at some stage, maybe.
Yeah, I've done a few of those. And there was the Eye of the Tiger solo in one of our shows.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
that.
Perfectly, a lot better than that. But
yeah, really good though at the time.
It was brilliant.
So you have some exciting new little project on the boil.
I do. It's called My Coffin Lid, My Shield, and it's a spoken word meets music and poetry show. I'm working with someone highly talented, which is always a good idea, I think.
It certainly helps. Yes. I don't want them too talented. They don't want to overshadow you, but they got to have some chops.
He's got chops. Simon Mason's his name.
He sure does.
Multi-instrumentalist producer. Someone called him a one-man Sigur Rós. I don't know if that works for him, but
yeah,
he does different stuff.
He does.
So he's will be in the background there. He said, I'll just be off to the side ball and doing my thing, and you just got to do the audience and the singing and the dancing and all that stuff.
So. Right. Well, I've been spending some time with the album this morning. I've been lucky enough to get a little sneak preview of it. And it sounds great. The production is very nice.
Super.
Yeah,
very happy with the production. And that's just from his home studio. And, yeah, he's a bit of a perfectionist with his sound and enjoys pulling it all together.
How did you guys get together?
Well, we met at a coffee table out in Yarraville talking about cricket, actually, because his son and daughter both play cricket, and my son plays cricket, and just a bunch of dads sitting there having a coffee while their kids were playing.
Right.
And got to talking, and turns out he's a muso, and he helped me out with another song, and then I just had this long poem I'd written, like really long. We're talking 60 pages of poem.
Right, yeah.
I wrote it over the period of a year. Where I just went back to it every day and did something more on it, and then it just became this amorphous, big kind of document of a year. And, I showed him that, and he thought, wow, it's pretty crazy. And I said, do you want to make some sounds and do a bit of music around it? And he said, yeah, how will we do it? And I said, I don't know. And we just turned up, and we used the long poem as kind of like a script for a musical in a way. So I'd be there saying stuff, singing stuff, cutting stuff out as we went. He'd be throwing sounds together or melodies, and then each sort of session we'd produce some little gem that became part of the show. And that kind of went on without fault for about, I don't know, 20 sessions. So
wow.
We ended up with the whole show and put it all together, and now we're going to take it out live. On
how do you see it as a live show?
Well, you just show up and you can have a beer, and you're going to have to put up with me being
showing
the guy.
Up is an important thing in life. If you can do that, then you're more than halfway there.
Yeah, we're going to show up, and we're going to do it end to end. So yeah, do it as one suite where there's no gaps between the tracks. It's a it's a genuine concept album, you know, played live.
Yeah, love it.
So looking forward to doing love that. It.
And it's a perfect way to do that sort of thing with music too, because that can be a bit demanding, like as a dry spoken word, if it's a longer sort of work.
Mm.
But it's wonderful to have and it's almost like it's scoring a film kind of vibe.
Is.
Very atmospheric and quite varied too. Really, really
lots of variation.
Takes you on a journey.
It's a lot of journey. Yeah. It's mortality. I think I've talked about it being about trying to hold on to your innocence in the face of a lot of barbarity on Earth at the moment. And I mean, it's got a lot of adult themes, but it's got some childish ones as well, which wouldn't be my work without that, Sean.
I dig that. Yes, it is. It is a challenging time. Indeed, isn't it, to hold on to innocence these days? Yeah.
Look, that's the thing. And, I dug right back into my childhood and also then being a parent and then into old age stuff and, you know, the full gamut.
that's quite a well to dive into. Without wanting to sound like a psychiatrist, tell me about your childhood.
Well, I've got a little track on the album and the show, which kind of I could just sing it to you, Sean, rather than try and speak out my childhood. I could just try and sing it off the bat. Yeah,
yeah. Do it.
All these works were poetry, but some of them survived into the show as poems and spoken word pieces. Others became songs, which was an interesting process.
Right, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, so that melodically they were working off a bit of a jam between my melodies and Simon's far more interesting ones. So, yeah, it was great, good to work with a musician in that way.
Yeah, but, yeah.
So this one's like that. I'll just try and do it from the head.
Great.
Childhood has gone. It should be obvious enough. There's no way to get it back. It had seemed all we'd need to do was think long enough or remember long enough, and there we'd be on our beds listening to the radio. The rabbit in its cage, still moments from forcing its head through a hole in the wire too small to pass through. But childhood has gone, and no one's pulling a rabbit out of anything. So my childhood goes a bit like that.
Wow. Oh, it's just drifting off into the dreaminess of your voice there.
Ethereal, Sean.
Yeah.
Ethereal.
Wow. Do you find that you've been overly nostalgic towards your childhood as you've grown older?
Probably not. Probably more the opposite.
I might be
coming into some nostalgia now.
Right.
But, yeah, previous to that, yeah, my novel was pretty hard, hard-edged regarding childhood, and so was my short fiction collection.
Yeah.
I think some of my poetry too.
Yeah.
But, you know, fictionalised. But
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you've got children. Well, they must be quite old now.
Yeah, they're ancient. I got one who's 22.
Yeah. Oh,
and 20, and but also 9. And the 9-year old keeps me very active and busy. And he's a musician, like a proper one.
Right.
We were working with GarageBand.
The 9-year old?
Yeah, he does a lot of work on GarageBand. He's got a lot of, he's got his YouTube channel. He's all set.
Love it.
Electro Kid.
Electro Kid.
Electro Kid. Check him out. But he's got his channel, and he said, "Oh, Dad, I'll teach you how to use GarageBand." Because I'm a spasty, I've got no idea how to use GarageBand. And I thought, oh, he's just layering stuff, right? And he's listening back. But he wasn't. He's putting tracks down.
Yeah.
Remembering them. Put another track down. Remember that. Put another track. I'm like, how are you doing that, son? I was trying to do some tracks. And I said, how are you doing it? He said, well, Dad, I'm a musician and you don't know what you're doing.
You just got served. what do they think about your poetry?
My daughter hates poetry.
Mm-hmm.
My other son, he's a bit more interested. And Ryland, yeah, he's pretty into it. He's into the show. Loves it when the swearing comes on.
Mm.
There's some good swearing, and he gets right into that.
Yeah.
So he's looking forward to hanging out for the show and
edgy
hearing the swearing.
Edgy. Tell me about the way. Let's go on a little walk through the dark forest of Paul Mitchell's mind, and tell me about your writing process.
Mm. Well, with this particular work, it was pretty much as I said. It was getting stuff out each day for that long poem.
Mm. Over a year.
Over a year. Mm. But I was committed to doing something on it each day, even if I felt like it was rubbish. I just threw it down, and it was all on the phone. So the whole draft happened on the phone, so there's no going back and revising. It's just drafting. And it's because I couldn't get any other creative space in my life at that time.
Yeah.
I had to do that. And, so there's a lot of really half-dreamlike perceptions because a lot of it was done quite late at night.
Yeah.
Just before you're going to bed, I had to bang out some stuff. But then when I went back to it, it had a lot of stuff that could be molded and shaped and developed. So it really varies from work to work. And I feel like I've been just buried in writing for the last few years. Haven't been out much, haven't done much, just writing.
But I love that that snatching those moments when you can get them and just getting it out on your phone.
Mm.
Another friend of mine, he wrote a novel. Just he was working full time and he wrote it on his phone, just in those little windows, on public transport, going to and from work, and it made me feel so lazy. Oh my God, you wrote a novel that way? That's amazing.
I've been there too.
That is making the most of your time on this planet, isn't it?
I did, because I've published one novel, I started another one, and the same thing, because I was working full time and thought, I've got to get some more novel out, and hit on a bit of an idea and just went for it over again another period of a year. And it was, all phone, at the bus stop and in the loo, and more often than I should be in the loo at work. Won't say where I was working at the time. And now,
that's quite a vision. You are just hiding away in the toilet, just banging out this novel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
So that's now. I finished the first draft now, and hopefully, I can find some time to get into the second. But it could be a little while yet.
Oh, so you finished the first draft of the next novel, right?
Yeah. It's all locked away, but it needs a lot of work. I feel like I'm at base camp of Everest on that one.
Right.
Still got to climb.
Well. Yeah, I wouldn't climb Everest these days.
It's a bit, bit lazy up there.
Well, it's people dying all over the place on that mountain.
A lot of rubbish up there too.
Cans
and
a lot of rubbish, a lot of corpses. They just leave them up there because it's too hard to get them.
Yeah.
You know? It's hard to... I don't know, it's just harsh. It's hard to feel sorry for people who die on Everest.
It is a bit. You know, what are you doing? What are you doing up there?
I don't quite understand that. Maybe it's admirable. I don't know.
Well, these days they just get dragged up.
They do put other people in danger doing it. So,
everyone except themselves, usually.
Just walk up a hill or something. I don't know.
Do it a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's better things to do with your time, I think, anyway.
You can write poems.
I digress. You could write poems. That you can write a novel. That's a mountain.
It's a mountain.
Is it not?
It's very much a mountain.
Yes. And so we, I think what we're going to do is we're going to play one of the tracks from your thing, because we don't have Simon, your co-pilot here today.
No.
So, but I wanted to play some of the stuff with the music. Sure. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to play, I don't know if you want to intro this track.
I can do that.
Golden Age we're going to play.
Oh, Golden Age. Yeah. He's a bit of a Midnight Oil fan. He liked it when I had the words Golden Age in there because it's a Midnight Oil track. But it's not very Midnight Oil, the song. It's it's a poem that we pretty much just banged out on the day. I just thought this is going to work better as a song and started throwing some melody ideas around, and then he put in this really nice gentle guitar groove and suddenly we had a song about the golden age of indifference, Sean.
It's quite a catchy number, actually.
Yeah,
I was listening to it in the car on the way here.
Nodding your head?
Yeah. All right, let's drop the needle on the digital wave.
This is the golden age of indifference, but I hope someone holds up the lantern on the night. Can I step on my shadow? You can't see mine. Yeah, I feel like I'm speaking to the air, but I've said that before, to the air. Yeah, I feel like I'm speaking to the air, but I've said that before, to the off the big one. This guy tells me he's gonna die, he's gonna ground for a while. I give him what he wanted, a faithful laugh. Yeah, I feel like I'm speaking to the air, but I've said that before, to the air. Yeah, I feel like I'm speaking to the air, but I've said that before, to the air. Ooh, the golden age of indifference. Ooh, the golden age of indifference. Ooh, the golden age of indifference. Asking my wife, will the world get any better? She keeps giving me no reply. So it seems pointless to protest. When I was a boy, I didn't know I was. Now I'm a man. Yeah, I feel like I'm speaking to the air, but I said that before, to the air. Yeah, I feel like I'm speaking to the air.
Work, Mr. Paul Mitchell. Now, the show is on August 3rd, is that correct?
August 4th.
Yeah. 4.
The Night Heron there in Footscray, edgy Footscray, Sean.
Ah, that's a lovely little venue, actually.
It is. It's great.
They have regular readings there, don't they?
They do. They weren't surprised by this kind of work that we were doing. That was right up their alley, which is rare, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You can surprise some venues with poetry, can't you?
Yeah. But they were like, no, bring this on. This is what we want.
That's good. Very supportive.
Yeah.
And so what day of the week is that?
It's a Sunday session. Kicking off at 4, and we think Simon's brother, who's also an ambient musician type, is going to do a brief set to kick off the afternoon.
Now, will that be the actual launch of it, or will it be available to our listeners before that?
We've been working hard behind the scenes to try and get it ready, but
yeah.
I reckon that's going to be the launch date. Yeah.
Yeah. And you'll have physical copies?
I don't think so. I think we'll be doing
online
or digital. It's just a question of which platforms. There'll be SoundCloud. But whether I get around to Spotify and all that is another question.
I would recommend it.
Mm.
Just for a matter of ease for people.
Exactly.
Even though it's really just as easy to jump on Spotify. I mean on SoundCloud. But the fact that people don't spend that much time on SoundCloud, well, not everyone does, just means it's not going to come across as many people's vision. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to get myself together and get it done again. I put a little EP out with a friend that was straight music, and we put that on Spotify. So I've just got to get myself busy again and
I think it's definitely worth it. And it is... Yeah, it's a hard call for bands these days about the big question is, do we put it on CD? Because the reality is that most people don't give shit about CDs now.
No.
They will. They will in the future. In the near future, I'm predicting, and just remember, you heard it from me, the CD revival is coming because everything old is new again. That'll be cool.
Yes.
Maybe about 5 years are going to be very cool. People will collect them and stuff. Right now, drink coasters. But that's the way it is.
Hang them in your tree.
Yeah. I still got a bunch, but I don't listen to them.
I've got a lot of CDs, John.
Do you
a lot of CDs.
To
them? No.
No.
In the car sometimes if it's unavailable on Spotify.
Right.
Pretty much.
Yes. Correct.
That's it.
But at the same time, it is nice to give people something physical, isn't it?
I can shake their hands.
Okay.
I'll probably go around doing that.
Deal.
In the middle of a track, bros.
Really?
That's physical.
Yeah.
I'll probably dance.
That's looking
which
out
is physical.
Bands. That is physical.
And yes. I don't dance. So when that happens, people will be getting something.
Yeah.
Something they will. I don't normally say.
Well, that's worth the price of admission alone. And, okay, so that's Sunday the 4th of August, 4 p.m. session.
Yeah.
And then people will be able to listen to that online. Are you going to have it for sale? Should put it on Bandcamp or something.
Well, we'll probably try and get some money out of someone for something.
Well,
we're going to run around with a bucket to put money in. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, great.
My son will be doing that and say, hey, how was that swearing?
Right.
Get some money in the bucket.
Yeah, it's a big swear bucket.
It's a big swear bucket right here.
I mean, because why else are we into poetry if not for the money, right?
Exactly. Like, I've just been adding up all the money I've earned, and it's taken me a couple of seconds.
Bless it. Yeah. Bless it. That's why poetry... is innocent.
It's an essential art.
It's the only art that's really almost impossible to sell out in, you know.
Pretty
you only
much.
Do it for the sake of the art itself.
Yeah. It's core to what I do. It's core to all the writing I do is the poetry, and I always return to poetry and I'll keep doing that. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I often find that other writing produces poetry too, that there's this churn element to a lot of prose that it's almost like splinters fly off, and the splinters that fly off is poetry, and I've got to be there to catch it
when it flies off. That's a good image.
Mm.
What one thing do you know now that you wish you knew when you started writing?
That I wouldn't make a living.
Mm.
And this is kind of weird because I was so naive and stupid, Sean. I had this idea that people who had books also have money. People have books in shops. They've got to have money. There's no way around it.
Yeah. I actually do remember thinking that too, actually.
Yeah. They just live on books. It's amazing, but it happens.
If you've got a book in a shop, you must be famous, right?
You're famous and you've got money.
Yeah.
And you can just keep doing that forever.
Yeah.
So that's where I was at back in a long time ago, Goatsville. And then eventually you're churning out books, you know, published books and poems and this and that and shows and all that. And you're going, well, am I still working in this other thing and this other thing and this other thing? But I just don't know what the options are except for, well, as you say, selling out. But I haven't been very good at that. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to follow fashions and trends.
Maybe sell a poem to Holden for commercial or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Come at me, Holden.
Jackaroo. Yeah, I could do something for Holden.
I remember when I was, just starting out, I met a poet and they told me they earned a living from poetry. And I thought, wow, okay, that's amazing. And it really sort of put a pep in my step. I thought, you can actually make a full-time living from poetry. It was years later I discovered that they taught poetry and I felt so cheated.
Ripped off.
That is not the same.
It's not the same.
That is earning a living from being a teacher.
Mm.
It's not, you know?
Yeah, it's just bullshit.
I felt cheated.
Yeah, I agree. And there's been, you know, people who will talk about them. Yeah, I do my poetry and all this, but they've also got a partner that works at a major law firm or whatever it is. They've got someone backing it up.
Yes, darling, I'll support you in your quaint little hobby.
And it's going beautifully, isn't it? Wish I had that. Note to my good wife, this is what we can do. It's going to work well.
That's right.
She's not into it. Not into it.
Right. Okay, now it's time for Wheeling and Stealing.
Oh, right.
This is a segment where we read other people's work that's floating our boat at the moment.
Mm.
I'm saying our because I'm assuming that maybe you might have something for us here because I can see you have a book in front of you.
I do. I've brought in a book, Sean.
Great.
Now, I'll tell a little bit of a story behind it because it's such a short story and it's a book of short stories, so we'll keep it short. I'm going to stop saying that now in a minute. This is an author called Helen DeWitt. The book's called Some Trick, 13 Stories. It's a hardback. I got it via Book Depository. I read a review in Harper's. I took no further notice of the author's nationality or anything to do with anything. Just thought, that sounds incredible.
Mm.
And I just bought the book. So I don't know anything about Helen. She's written a lot of books. But this is, I mean, the themes of the stories are all around geniuses who are either misunderstood, stupid in other ways, people trying to get things out of them because they're geniuses. And that's the theme of each story. I grabbed this one out just because I really like the first line of a story called Climbers, because it's about a genius author who's surrounded by lots of climbers.
Not climbing Mount Everest, are they?
No, not climbing plants either. They're genuine social climbers.
Okay, right.
So do you want me to read a little bit of that there?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I would like that a lot.
The thing you have to understand is that I really don't understand people. Gil sat on a squashy old sofa, legs akimbo, forearms on thighs. He was wearing a dark green polo shirt with a small red turtle in the place where a more fashionable polo shirt sports a crocodile. It had the trusting incomprehension of a presidential dog. I mean, for instance, Peter Dijkstra. There are these people, they totally say, dude, Peter Dijkstra. I love Peter Dijkstra. What a genius. But then they say, oh, but he's impossible. We met him for drinks in Amsterdam and he spent the whole night talking to the bartender's dog. And then he walked off with Jason's brand new moleskin. It is not new information that he wore a dark green polo shirt with a turtle on the left breast. But sometimes we can't be rational. If a garment quietly clothes its owner while he speaks, this cannot be uncomplainingly loyalty. It cannot be touching, because this is what garments do. What else would it do? Walk off in a huff? and yet there was a touching loyalty in the quiet, uncomplaining persistence of the turtle on the dark green breast. It had been there, and it was still there. But see, this is what I don't understand, because see, say Peter Dijkstra comes to New York and needs a place to stay. He can come to my place and stay as long as he wants, and I'll just go off and couch surf with friends to get out of his way. The friendly crowd let him talk uninterruptedly on. They filled the loft that would be placed so glad-handedly at the disposal of Peter Dijkstra. Okay, now, let's say I'm off the premises and Peter Dijkstra rents a van and loads it up with everything I own. I go back and everything's gone. Books, CDs, DVDs, TV, computer, baseball cards, gone. And it's not just the stuff. Peter Dijkstra went through my papers, my personal papers, and he took my diaries and my notebooks and my photo albums, all this incredibly personal, irrepressible paraphernalia. He just took it. The place is empty. All I've got is the clothes I'm standing in, my laptop and my iPhone. So I'm standing in this empty apartment and I'm looking around, and the point is, I'm happy. I'm ecstatic. Peter Dijkstra has appropriated this stuff in some mysterious way. My stuff is going to contribute to a book by Peter Dijkstra. I feel honored. I mean, the stuff is not contributing to a work of genius just sitting there in my apartment. And it goes on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We've all got a Peter Dijkstra in our life.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for your contribution to Whelan and Stillen. Now, I'm going to read a few short poems from This Veranda, issue 10, 1995. It came out, and I'm going to read, these are very short, so I'm going to read three of these by Peter Bukowski, my old mate. Peter Bukowski, I think, is one of our country's finest poets, actually, and he was one of the first poets I ever met, because he worked at Gaslight Music, where I also worked briefly. He wasn't the first poet I ever met. The first poet I met gave me a buck of bong, actually, which was also my first taste of marijuana. It was a baptism of THC fire, I tell you. That was challenging.
And then they read their poetry to you all night.
Yeah, they may have. I don't know. I think I passed out. She lived in St Kilda, and she was great. And then I met Peter, and and he was very inspiring to me. So these are three poems of Peter's, and it's actually it's called three poems. A symptom, and the first one's called A Symptom in the House of Cards. The nail each week, further loosened by the weight of the adulterer's coat. That's quite prophetic, really. House of Cards. And that sex pest on that show. Anyway, moving on. Beating God's cage. The drop of water envies the piano. The cloud envies a nail. The conductor's baton admires the flight of birds. And each day Frank gets a little closer to entering that gun store. Oh, that's harking back to the gun in my poem.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And the last one is called Poetry Festival. Words and listeners perished in the stampede of egos.
Why are we laughing, Sean? There's nothing funny about that. Never happens.
Which is a perfect segue to our next segment, The World of Whelan.
Wow.
Because we've got some exciting news here in the camp of the World of Whelan. All right, so very excitingly, the program for the Melbourne Writers Festival 2019 has just come out, and I'm stoked to finally be able to tell you that more than a Whelan will be represented at Melbourne Writers Festival this year. We'll be doing a live show called Sad is Rad. So it's a continuation of our last live show along that theme, because it was just such an amazing night. So it's going to be exploring the gentle art of melancholy through poetry, music and comedy. And I haven't got this full lineup locked in yet, so I won't reveal that as yet. But it's on Sunday, 8th of September, 2:30 p.m. at the Toff. I'm also involved in another show at the Writers' Festival called I Do's and I Don'ts. And it's about writing your own wedding vows, whether they be real or fictional. And I'm going to be sort of hosting that event along with some help from Anne Edmonds and Nath Valvo. And very much looking forward to that too. And you've got something going on in the Melbourne Spoken Word Festival, Spoken Word and Poetry Festival.
Yeah, at the P Word Sessions, which is at the Motley Bauhaus in North Fitzroy, Scotchmas Street. That's on 21st of July. Another 4 p.m. start. They get me up. I can get there by 4. So, yeah. And there's a coach feature who I apologise, I don't have his name.
That's okay. We'll I'm going to throw a link to that in our little show notes anyway.
And you can read your own stuff, and kind of stuff.
And that's hosted by Anthony O'Sullivan.
Anthony O'Sullivan, Amanda Anastasia.
Love their work. Love their work.
Yeah.
You've got it all going on at the moment. You've just...
All of a sudden,
assuming like your ultimate form,
puff of smoke,
yeah,
puffing away for a while.
And once the album is out, I'll drop some links to that in our socials and stuff, so many people thanks. Can find that.
Awesome.
If they can't get along to your gig, thanks for joining me, Paul Mitchell.
It's been a big pleasure, Sean.
It's good to have you in the studio.
Good to see you and hear you.
And We're going to close the show now, but I'm going to read a poem. And it's by a prompt. I was telling somebody recently how much I love the sound of animals snoring. My friend Annie. And Annie Malona, Annie Moth, she has many names. She's a mystical being. And that actually is a segue to another bit of news I have in that I have a piece of writing in her new wedding magazine called Unholy Matrimony, which is out now and specializes in alternative weddings, I guess you'd say, like pagan, punk, rock and roll kind of weddings. It's a really amazing magazine, so I recommend you looking that up, Unholy Matrimony. And so this poem is called The Sound of Animals Snoring. I could listen to it for hours. Put a human snoring next to me, and that's a different matter altogether. But the slow, gentle rumble of an animal snoring is a thunderstorm off in the distance. It's just passed. Or it never got here in the first place. Either way, it will bring you no harm. I once lay down next to a dog called Shankly, just to get a ringside seat next to this snore fest, and while he dozed, and I listened to the long, slow breathing and the wheeze and the pop and crackles of air moving through his slobbery jowls. I watched him dream, and then I was in the dream, and we both ran furiously through a park somewhere. I never realized how good the world looked through the eyes of a dog. Everything is your friend. Every smell is a love affair. Everything edible is really edible, even the things that aren't.
Nice one.
So thank you. Shout out to Annie for providing the prompt of the sound of animals snoring. You have been listening to More Than a Wheel. Many thanks to Castaway Studios and Derek Myers, my producer of many things magical. And shout out to Lux Country, our generous supporter. I'm putting up a whole bunch of new swag, some photos of it on the socials today, because I've got very exciting new swag from Lux Country. And thank you to Paul Mitchell, and thank you for listening. Wheelin' out.
That Awesome Podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.